a very good evening to you. And here we are once again on a Friday night on Manx Radio, 9 o'clock. It can only mean one thing. It is time for Sweet and Swing with myself, Howard Kane. And what have we got? How about a bit of Carl Barreto? Haven't heard from him for a while. More from our Gracie, who've been enjoying dipping into that CD. The music of Cole Porter might make that a regular of the next few weeks. And to start off, a little bit of classic swing with the Duke. I'm sure you recognise that one to get us going this evening. Perdido, Duke Ellington and his orchestra. Not the classic recording, but it is a recording by Duke and the boys. I think they were all boys back in the day. A nice selection on this CD. Not all Duke stuff, but some nice ones. And in any case, some Kings of Swing. Another classic. I keep coming across these ones from the old maestros. He had a lot of compilations, as well as a lot of individual artists as well on CD and vinyl. So, for an extra mark, can you tell me what Perdido means? You at the back there, what was that? Hands up. Yes, you're quite right. You're quite right, Smith Minor. It does mean lost in Spanish. Or also apparently sloppy or indecent. In this particular case, I don't think any of those directly, as much as I'm sure it is true that perdido means lost or can mean sloppy or indecent. The tune itself, I think, written, well, it's probably attributed to Duke, but like Caravan, I think, as well, written by Juan Tizal in the 1940s, if memory serves correct. But he was obviously part of the Duke organisation, and I think most people think, oh yes, a Duke Ellington tune. But I think Juan actually wrote it, and maybe the Spanish name appealed to him as well. He actually named it, not so much directly after the sloppy and decent bit, although that might be attributed to why it was there in the first place. It's a street, Perdido Street in New Orleans. New Orleans, as we might say here, or New Orleans, as they tend to say there. A place I have actually been, I can say. Wonderful it was too. I do confess, though, I don't remember seeing Perdido Street. We were in the French Quarter, and I sort of went to see Basin Street and all the usual things you'd want to see. I don't remember seeing Perdido Street. Probably just didn't get onto my radar and I didn't look for it. I might have walked down Perdido Street and not realised I was there. Wonderful place, and I would definitely not hesitate in going there again. And if you have a chance, and if you're into your jazz, and you want to feel that you've walked along the streets that are so long associated with the roots of particularly traditional and early jazz, then if you can get to New Orleans, it's worth, more than worth, a visit. You might want to either avoid or go during Mardi Gras, when I believe it's pretty lively. There was a sort of mini Mardi Gras when we were there, but only, I can't remember exactly what it was, not the full Mardi Gras, but they were, there was a sort of a procession of some kind, and they were doing what they do a lot of the time. Throw out beads. Beads are in. They're just as we might do confetti or sweets or something. It's beads there. You get loads of beads and necklaces and things being thrown from the floats, and people try and catch them and hang dozens of them around their necks and shoulders and wrists and whatever the case may be. Don't ask me where that came from. Great fun, though. But I believe it's multiplied by 100 during Mardi Gras. And a fair amount of flesh as well, but we won't dwell on that. Not in this weather, in any case. I think Sam Brown's got the right idea for what you need at this time of year.
You belong to me. Be careful crossing streets. Ooh, don't eat meats. Ooh, cut out sweets. Ooh, you'll get a pain of roux in your tum-tum. Keep away from bootleg hooch when you're on a spree. Take good care of yourself. You belong to me. Thank you.
Sam Brown with Jack Hilton. Button up your overcoat. Some very wise advice in the last week or three, isn't it, here on the Isle of Man and further afield. It has to be said, been pretty chilly, to say the least. Particularly for the Isle of Man, where we're not that used to it. I was listening to a caller on the Man in Line yesterday morning, I think it was, or yesterday lunchtime, and they were saying that in parts of Siberia, one of the towns which does have a lot of, permafrost and lives in permanent cold. I don't know that I could stand that. And they'd hit a new record. Amazing when you think global warming, but I know global warming doesn't necessarily mean just everything gets hotter non-stop. It can lead to more storms and to more extremes of weather, etc. It's a complicated old thing, which I don't pretend for a moment to fully understand. However, in this place in Siberia, they had recorded their coldest ever. And I think he was quoting something like minus 60. You can't really think about that, can you, when you think we're all freezing to death at minus 4 or minus 5 with a bit of wind chill. Minus 60. I do remember watching a programme about there, and yes, you have to wrap up like, quite literally, Nanook of the North in order to go anywhere. As the Inuits well knew, yes, furs, or probably more modern materials now, excellent insulators, everything has to be insulated. Your eyelids can actually freeze shut if you're not careful. And I did read somewhere where cars used to be kept going all the time. Lord knows what that does to the atmosphere and global warming. Because if they turned the engines off, they would freeze up. So they just kept them going. Even when you parked up, you just left it running. Unbelievable. Don't know what's going to happen there. Hopefully they're moving away from that particular habit. But I suppose, what do you do if you're trying to live in those sort of conditions? We haven't had minus 60 here. We have had the ubiquitous bit of snow, which causes great difficulty every year, haven't we? We're not geared up for it, I suppose, in the same way, so we don't have all the snow blowers and gritters to do every single road. We have gritters, but yes, you know the story. It all causes problems. I have to say, I was caught up in a particularly slippery debacle on Craig Willie's Hill, which wasn't pleasant, and I felt for a couple of people whose cars went home in bits. One poor soul ended up in the gutter and were in the gully by the side of the road there, and someone else careered into another car across the ice. Blessedly, I managed to escape the worst of the chaos and slid back down the hill into the car park at Glen Helen, but wasn't fun for a while, it has to be said. Wasn't fun. I didn't envy the policeman who was trying to sort that one out. Hopefully, we won't get too much more. Fingers crossed, eh? Fingers crossed, but that's the whole nature of it. I was listening to the lyrics there as well on there. Beware of a hooch was one of the words, wasn't there? Beware of, what do you say, illegal hooch or illicit hooch or something along those lines. Which was just made me think as I was listening to it. Back in the day, which is a few years ago, I do remember in a certain drinking den we used to go to over here, and I won't mention any names or places, but some hooch used to be unveiled late into the evening. Came via the father of the proprietor of the establishment, who lived not here but over in Ireland, and he did indeed make not so much hooch, I think it's more known as bachine, isn't it, in Ireland. Suffice to say, illicit liquor, which you felt you could probably put it into your lighter if you were a cigar smoker and just use it to fuel your lighter. It was clear and pretty much odourless, and I don't know how much neat alcohol was in it. My lordy. Small one of those, and yes, you would think Sam Brown's advice, very wise. Be aware of illegal bootleg hooch, I think was the line, wasn't it? Marvellous stuff. You're listening, of course, to Sweet and Swing with myself. H, always lovely to have your company. How about a little bit of Glenn? He's going all American. American Patrol, Glenn Miller and the boys. I told you we were going all-American. Wonderful stuff. You can never go wrong with a little bit of Glenn. I mentioned earlier on a bit of Carl Barrow was coming up. And you know what? It's coming up just about now. We did do a feature back in the day, I think, with the old maestro. I remember doing something on Carl Barrow. He hasn't featured for quite some time, as far as I recall, looking back at the notes on Sweet and Swing. So I thought we'd better put that right now. A wonderful character, born in the Trinidad in the West Indies in 1914, and he started out playing in an orphans band and then joined the Trinidad Constabulary Band as he got into adulthood, moved over to England in 1937 and joined the wonderful Ken Snakehips Johnson at the Florida Club before they moved on to the band at the Café de Paris. And famously, of course, it was there where sadly Ken lost his life when the it was a blitz. They were playing during a bombing, or at least the bombing of the town, and they carried on playing, and a bomb exploded, killing the leader and, well, causing the band to be broken up. It never got away from that. And then after that, he went on to work with a variety of British band leaders, Lou Stone, Joe Loss, Eric Winston. A fine lead alto, a good clarinet player, lovely vocal style. Here he is. We've been to New Orleans. He's going to take us to Harlem now.
Jive, you gotta answer me.
Answer you, then what do we do?
I'm gonna hit 'em high, I'm gonna hit 'em low. So look out, boys, here we go.
Thank you.
go, a little twofer for you. Jerry Moore was the pianist in the second half of that twofer. A name, again, you don't often hear that often these days, do you? But a fine pianist, he, a most underrated musician in many ways, worked, as it says in the notes here, Jerry can claim to have worked from the sublime, accompanying Adelaide Hall, to the ridiculous, Sid Millward's Nitwits. He was also one of the two piano players featured with Victor Sylvester. Yeah, he would have done all right playing with Victor, I think, wouldn't he? Not too bad at all. So a fine player and a nice touch of the keyboard. Really nice one, that. And what was he playing? I've forgotten the track now. What was he actually playing for us? He was, oh, that's right, When Two Love Each Other. And before that, Carl Barreto, the wonderful vocalist and clarinetist, and a great character as well. And it's interesting, I was just having a look to see whether Wiki, Mr. Wiki, always useful if you are looking for a bit more information on any of these characters. Wikipedia has very little to say about Carl Barreto, other than the fact, which is quite nice, that Melody Maker named him the best clarinetist for 7 consecutive years back in the day. So you can gather just how good a player he actually was. I'm not going to take that away from him. And his vocal talents weren't too badly known either. In later life, he played for quite some time. So, as I say, after the tragic death of Ken Snakehips Johnson, he did go on to play with all sorts of people, including violinist Stefan Grappelli, played with Dave Wilkins, played with all sorts of people, toured with Ambrose, and then eventually went on to work with his wife. He went right into the 1940s working for Cyril Stapleton, and then 20 years later he was making solo appearances with his wife, who was May Cooper, and they then emigrated out to Australia, where, as far as I'm aware, they continued a successful career down Oz side. And according to Norman Morgan, who wrote the notes for this CD compilation of Carl's work a few years ago, he said, according to a well-known BBC Big Band presenter, he said Carl Barreto died when he was in fact still in good health, so a sudden death, and working in cabaret with May Cooper in Australia. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. He would have been a reasonable age, but maybe he just had a heart attack or something. I don't know whether he died on the bandstand, but he died back in 1998, so not that long ago. So he had a reasonable life, it has to be said, bearing in mind he was born in 1914, so he's well into his 80s. He could still have been performing, and I suppose, frankly, if you're a performer, that's the way to go, isn't it? You know, do a Doddy or a Tommy Cooper or something and just die while a bit of a shock for the audience. But if you're a performer, much nicer than having to gradually fade away, I dare say, would it not be the case? I'd have thought so. Gracie Fields, our Gracie, we've been enjoying dipping into that, haven't we, over the last few weeks. Another novelty number, I think, coming up, and something you don't really see that often these days. The Punch and Judy Show.
Come with me and I will take you back again to days of long ago, where we used to gather on to see the merry Punch and Judy Show. Just a frame with curtains stacked upon it made of colored calico, and a lot of little wooden people just jumping to and fro. There was Punch, a cunning little fellow with his funny nose and chin, and his wife, though better known as Judy, who came gaily tripping in. There were many other little figures, some were fat and some were thin. But the kids are waiting very anxiously, so let the show begin. The curtains are open, what do we see? Goodness me, Punch with a club hits poor Judy on the head. Then up comes a policeman in his suit of blue, brave and true. Punch with one blow knocks the poor old Bobby dead. All the kids begin to laugh. Oh, gee, 'twas lots of fun. Yelling loud to all the crowd, says Punch, that's number one. Then up comes the hangman, so tall and slim, stern and grim. He sets up his gallows and with a blow. Punch laid him low, and he is seen no more. Now the show is very nearly over. How we hate to see it end. All the figures come back for the finish, even men's and gracious men. Of all the things that tickled every fancy in the days of long ago, there were none that made us quite so happy as the Punch and Judy show.
And that's that, the Punch and Judy show. A delicate little number, actually. Not so quite so sweet rather than novelty, I would say, isn't it? Gracie Fields, pretty much describing, in song, the Punch and Judy show. What happens in every Punch and Judy show? The basic story is always the same, isn't it? The crocodile, the sausages, the hangman, Punch, Judy, all pretty violent stuff. Is it non-PC now? I have no idea. Suffice to say, I can't remember the last time I saw a Punch and Judy show. I grant you, I'm a bit beyond the average age of the audience. Nonetheless, who doesn't like a Punch and Judy show? It's still a real art. And I can remember seeing Punch and Judy over here. Is there still a Punch and Judy man on the Isle of Man? I'd like to think there is. Get in contact if you are, or if you know of one. It'd be lovely. We should should hear more from them. Maybe they'll be out this summer, I don't know. But with any thoughts, Punch and Judy or otherwise, you're always welcome to get in contact with the show. Delighted to hear from you, as always. Howard Kane at manxradio.com. That's a lowercase an E on Kane. Howard Kane at manxradio.com. If you'd like to drop me a line with any thoughts, Punch and Judy or otherwise, something else, more Carl Balto, more Carl Barreto, or less Carl Barreto, or more Glenn, or whatever thoughts strike you. Always likely, nice to hear from you, and always willing to help if we can. Play the odd request or ideas, whatever. Nice to hear from you. Howard Kane at manxradio.com. Or, of course, Howard Sweet and Swing, Manx Radio, Broadcasting House, Douglas Head, Douglas, in the Isle of Man. IM15BW is the postcode if you want to put pen to paper, and I'm certainly not going to stop you. Nor will this man, the man in the pork pie hat. Here's a longer one for you. Time to put your slippers on, get another log on the fire, go and make some cocoa, pour another whiskey, whatever you like to do, because this is a longer track from Mr. Lester Young. Something happens to me all the time. I guess I'll have to change my plan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very nice too. Lester Young, the man in the pork pie hat and friends, recorded in New York in about 1956. That was, I can be more precise because it's almost an exact date, January the 12th, 1956. Which makes it, what, 67 odd, almost exactly 67 years ago. Don't think about it. Lester Young on tenor, of course. Roy Eldridge on the trumpet there. Vic Dickinson took the trombone solo. Teddy Wilson at the piano, fine player here as well. Freddie Green guitar, Gene Ramey bass. Joe Jones, the original Joe Jones, at the drums. I guess I'll have to change my plan. Lovely loping sound going along to that one. Always like to keep some of these longer selections, mostly from our friends at Avid, who bring out so many of these reissues very effectively on these sort of doubles and treble CDs, or double CDs, but sometimes with three or four albums or more squeezed onto them in a lovely sort of way, it has to be said. Cole Porter, the song is music by Cole Porter. I found this one when I was going through the racks as well. A nice mixture of all Cole Porter music done by a selection of artists. What about this one? Just One of Those Things. Just One of Those Things, given a reading there by Richard Hember and his Ritz-Carlton Orchestra, with Stuart Allen taking the vocals back in 1935. So casting your mind back a couple of years, if you go back that far, I'm afraid I don't. Richard Hember, again, one of these other wonderful characters, born in New Jersey. His folks gave him a violin, which he rather liked, but then they took it off him again after they found him performing in some rather seedy Newark dives. So they sent him off to military school instead as a young man in 1915, and then stole away to New York City, where Sophie Tucker, we've heard her on the show before now, heard him play, and they had a novelty act for a time. He worked in vaudeville in Tin Pan Alley, managed Rudy Vallee's orchestra service, something of an entrepreneur and Yes, not the sort of ego. He's an ideas man, not backwards and coming forwards with himself. And so soon had his own booking agency for bands. And in 1932, I see, he required the first known vanity telephone number, rather like, you know, special plates for cars. So his telephone number, in those old dialing days where the letters and numbers were sort of interchangeable, as it were, was R-Himber, answered 24 hours a day. Well, that's not too bad at all, is it? Also, which immediately sort of endears him to me, I must admit, was known as a bit of a prankster and had a great sense of humour, seemingly, if a bit bonkers, and things he might not get away with these days. So it's reported that the employees of a Tootshot's 51st Street Chop House in New York City, which he frequented, one of his favourite eateries, always thought, oh, Lord, Mr. Himber's coming in again. They slightly got worried when he came in because of his fondness for a habit which back in the day was called butter snapping. I love this. I don't think we should start it again. It's not going to go down well. Butter snapping. Yes, I'd never heard of it either. What was butter snapping? Well, apparently it was the art of placing a pat of butter in the middle of your napkin, so then when you threw it upwards with force, it would stick to the ceiling. I'm not quite too sure how that works. The butter in the middle of the napkin, and you throw it up. So the butter stuck to the napkin, and then you throw the whole thing up, and the whole mess sticks to the ceiling. I think that's it hanging down, presumably. His other favourite was bread crumbing. Yes, you're sort of halfway there. I don't think you get away with this these days. Rolling bread into hard pellets, and then you toss them, usually at a woman, another woman restaurant goer, ideally with a, what's the word? Good decolletage, I think. So you'd aim it at them so the bread would hit them at the neckline and all the crumbs would then go down into their cleavage. You'd probably get away with it, you see. It's just a bit of harmless fun in the 1930s. I don't think it would go down quite as well these days, folks, so don't really try it unless you want to be arrested. I think it's probably now seen as an arrestable offence. I know, it seems harmless enough, but yes, I can imagine, perhaps quite rightly, people thinking it wasn't as much fun as it was in the 1930s. The butter snapping? Well, I don't suppose you get arrested. I think you might get chucked out of the restaurant and not invited back. I wouldn't try to Enzo's or anywhere else. But yes, you have to admire a man who thought butter snapping was good fun. Wonderful, I enjoyed that. We'll have more from that little selection of the music of Cole Porter next week. But if I chat too much longer, we won't get our Women of Jazz in. This is another little mini-series we've got at the moment. Classic female jazz artists from the late 30s to the early 1950s. And here's one, I will bet you, a good 50p and a cream bun, you've not heard of Vivian Gary and her quintet. Thank you. Could they swing? I would say they could. Very impressive indeed. I love that one. It's more than a swing towards the Hot Club de France or something like that. But swings like mad. Wonderful stuff. The Vivian Gary Quintet. A woman's place is in the groove. Who's going to disagree with that? I think it was specially assembled, actually, for this recording, as far as I can see. Looking at the liner notes on the actual CD compilation by Leonard Feather, says, like the Williams and Booker units also on this CD, Vivian Gary's Quintet, a group assembled specially for the recordings. And it is worth mentioning it, if only for the names of the band members. So the leader, Vivian Gary, was playing bass. I thought she was on the violin, but she was actually the bass player leading that, and very effectively too. On violin, the fantastically named Ginger Smock, Edna Williams on trumpet, Winsome Beatty, or Winnie Beatty, on piano, and Dodie Jeschke at the drums. Fantastic stuff. Produced by Steve Scholes and Leonard Feather, who wrote the liner notes for this as well, and recorded in 1946. And Leonard Feather himself says, for the session, I chose some of the best West Coast women talents I could find. Ginger Smock, a violinist who played with the Los Angeles All-City Symphony. Edna Williams, an alumna of the Sweethearts of Rhythm and the Prairie View Co-eds. Dodie Jeschke, a Krupa and Sid Catlett admirer, who was on a CBS radio for a year with the Victory Bells. Winnie Beatty, who'd recorded with Slim Gaillard and Barney Bigard, as well as working with the Vivian Gary Quintet, or trio, and the number was bassist Gary's Gifted's Husbands, Arv Garrison. Marvellous. That more or less rounds things up for this week. Ginger Smock, I mean, that is just a fantastic name. We will be back, same time, same place next week. Look after yourselves, mind any chilly patches, and we'll see you then. Cheerio.